two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielso Lake puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
This is Cougar Sports Saturday. Cougar Sports Saturday.
A presentation of KSL Sports.
Got it for three. Cougars by 20.
Every Saturday, all year long. BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans.
For Cougar fans.
It's Cougar Sports Saturday.
Here are your hosts,
Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte. Legacy home of BYU Sports.
KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Good afternoon, Cougar fans, and welcome into another spring edition of Cougar Sports Saturday here on KSL News Radio. And the storm has passed. There's blue skies, some optimism. The weather's getting better. I'm glad to be back here with you, Mitch Harper, as we get ready for another edition of CSS.
Yeah, happy Saturday to all of Cougar Nation out there. The off season is in full effect right now, but yep. We got a jam packed show as always. We got Dave McCann coming up in hour number one, and then in hour three we'll have the newest member of the BYU football family, Caleb Hayes, an Oregon State transfer who's going to be eligible this year. And transfer talk is going to be something that we're hitting on today because transfers now have the opportunity to play immediately, so that's going to be some big news.
Yeah, it was a landmark moment in the world of college sports, and that's where we'll start the show off today.
The Leadoff. A look at the stories making headlines right now. It's time for The Leadoff on Cougar Sports Saturday.
Earlier in the week, the NCAA approved a change to the transfer rule where you'll get an opportunity to transfer one time and not have to sit out a year. You won't have to put in a waiver, which will affect BYU football this upcoming season. And we'll get to that a little bit later on in the program. But I want to start things off, Mitch. I know that you love the portal. I know you love recruiting. So it would be silly for me to ask you if you think this is a good thing, because I think you do. But I want you to tell me why you think this is a good thing for college sports and especially for the athletes.
I think it's a great thing because it's going to take away some of the power that these coaches have had in college sports. I think that's been one of the big issues. I mean, in the past, you've seen stories of maybe guys want to transfer to BYU, but coaches will say, oh, you can't go to that school or you can't go there. The transfer portal kind of opened things up to where coaches didn't have that authority to block guys from going to certain programs, which has been nice. But now these guys, these players – have more power, I think more control, more autonomy. And I think that's a good thing, honestly, because I feel like, you know, these coaches and programs should every single day, I think, trying to be recruiting their guys to their program and make sure that they are in a program and a culture that is keeping up and moving forward and evolving. And I think it's a good thing all around. I think it's going to be something that's good for college sports and I think definitely for BYU.
I like it. I would fall short of saying I love it, and I think the only reason I don't love it is for this simple principle, which is I'm worried that athletes are not going to want to fight through hardships and just transfer, and then we'll just be seeing roster turnover to the likes that we've never seen. Because it's been trending up for a while now. And I do want to say, Mitch, I totally agree with you. I think coaches have too much power. And I like that these athletes have this opportunity. Because there have been times where, you know, one guy that comes to mind in recent memory transferring to BYU, Joe Tukuwafu, like, that was a mess for no reason. It didn't need to be that way when he was leaving Utah State. But in 2019, we saw 15% of NCAA football players transfer, which was a record number in terms of players changing teams. That number is going to go up. And I hope and pray that a lot of these guys will still fight through some hardships, because there's a lot of guys in the history of BYU sports that their careers did not get off on a good foot, but yet by their junior and senior year, they made substantial marks on the program. I mean, especially in BYU basketball in recent memory, I could probably name 5 or 10 guys, a Dalton Nixon, a Logan Magnuson, that maybe they take their talents elsewhere because they're not playing that much, but they stay and they make a big impact. So I am a little bit worried about that, but it was critical that these players, it just needed to become fair because the standard was so different between athletes and coaches. It's more fair now. I think in the next couple of years, Mitch, maybe you agree with me, I think there'll be a huge spike. And then as the novelty wears off, I think it'll settle in and things will become normal. But there is a little concern that I have with it.
Yeah, I think that this is the one year where there's going to be a huge spike. I think it's going to honestly taper off quite a bit, especially when you factor in, you know, name, image, likeness potentially becoming a thing where if guys are making money off their YouTube channel, they're making money off their vlogs, and they're at a certain program, even if they're not playing much and they're still making some coin, they might just say, I'm going to stay.
Right.
You know, and I think, you know, with the transfers too, it's only a one-time transfer. You know, if they transfer a second time, kind of like a Tyson Williams, unless they're a graduate transfer, they're not going to be able to get the immediate waiver to play immediately. So guys got to still make educated decisions in this. And with the transfer portal too, you know, I think that a lot of people have come out and spoke out against the transfer portal. But I think that, you know, honestly, there's no guarantee that any of these athletes get a scholarship waiting for them on the other side of the portal. So they better be making educated decisions. And I think that's why you're going to see a lot of guys still be willing to kind of battle and stay within programs and maybe be those program guys. But if you're, you know, a quarterback, or if you're someone in a position where only one guy can play, or in basketball where only 5 guys can play on the court at a time, maybe you're looking to have that opportunity to get more playing time. And because you only got 4 years to make it happen, you're going to move forward, and now you got that luxury to play immediately at the next school. So I think it's a good thing overall, and I think that what's going to be good for BYU is that you're going to have potentially, you know, guys that maybe go serve missions for the church. Maybe they sign with another program out of high school, and they maybe go to that program when they come back from a mission. But then maybe after a year or so of being at that school, they're like, maybe I should have went to BYU. I think that's going to work out maybe nicely. There's going to be a few occasions of that, I would imagine, where guys are going to be like, I want to go to BYU. We've seen it in the past before. Heck, there was a rule created about Riley Nielsen coming back from a mission, transferring from Utah State to BYU. So I think it'll be a good thing. And BYU's shown in both football and basketball, if they can get better, they are definitely going to dip into that transfer portal. So this will be definitely a good thing for BYU going forward.
And I'm glad you bring up the BYU angle, because we want to hear from you listeners listening to Cougar Sports Saturday today. You can text us at 57500. Do you think this helps BYU? Does this hurt BYU? I think this is just an easy question to answer, and I'm with you. I think this absolutely helps BYU. I think because of that recruiting base, where we know that they go after high-profile guys who are members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And oftentimes, those, what, 5-star guys don't go to BYU, but maybe they circle back around. And I think that's a great point that you make. I think it will certainly help BYU. And I think just the nature of BYU, and especially the football program, because Kalani plays so many guys. It's just, there's such a good vibe in that program. They rely on their depth. I think that BYU is going to be able to retain players. I don't think we're going to see a huge uptick in guys leaving BYU, but I do think we'll see, if not the same rate, maybe a hair more players transferring into BYU to get that experience and play for BYU. So I think it'll help BYU. I'm with you. It's a good thing. I really don't want it to become a free-for-all where the rosters turn over 50, 60%. That's not how it's been, but it's been trending upwards for years, and I hope it just settles in that mid-teens percentage in terms of turnover, because it could get crazy, but I don't think it will ultimately. This is going to be a fascinating thing because this has been something that's been rumored for so long. And I think it could have benefited BYU in past where guys that BYU could have used that year have to sit out. That's no longer going to be the case. So it's going to be fascinating to see going forward.
College sports as we once knew it is going out the window.
Yep.
This is going to be a summer, especially if name, image, likeness gets approved, where it's going to change the face of the sport. And I think that, you know, like you mentioned earlier, the novelty could wear off, and I think things kind of simmer down. And I do expect that. Kind of like a couple years ago, cost of attendance was a big thing. Like, ooh, BYU, how are you going to keep up with cost of attendance? And they became one of the top three schools in terms of cost of attendance, and now no one ever brings that up. You know, these student-athletes get that money for cost of attendance, and now that's not even a thing. Everyone thought that was going to be a big, huge boom in recruiting, and it's not. So I think things will simmer down for sure, but I do believe that, you know, every single day these programs, you know, BYU, whoever it may be, you got to recruit your athletes. And one thing that I think Cougar fans should be excited about going forward into this era of one-time waiver transfers is that you look at Kalani's program, you look at Mark Pope's programs, who have been guys that have transferred out and make you go, man, how did BYU lose out on him? Usually the guys that enter the portal out of BYU the last few years have been, okay, I mean, I can see why that guy entered the portal. Like,
right.
You know, his role got diminished, or maybe it was a mutual separation. I know transfers are always a difficult thing, but there's never been in the last couple of years just this, you know, this hot shot 4-star, 5-star recruit, whatever it may be, enters the portal after only a year and they're gone. Like, BYU has been pretty good. Their coaches have done a nice job at retaining their top talent and having that communication with the players that maybe are on the back end of the roster and like, hey, this is your options. You know, this is what you can be in this program. But there's also that opportunity if you need to move on. We'll help you find the next landing spot. So I think that's a good thing for BYU that they got the right coaches in place to be able to succeed and navigate during these unique times in college sports.
And what I love, too, Mitch, about the current state of the BYU programs, especially the big, like football and basketball, you think about football and the impressive improvements they've made to the player experience, that's going to be more important than ever. Recruiting your own players. Recruiting is no longer just going out and finding guys in the portal or going and visiting high school guys. You got to recruit your own players. And Kalani's made a huge investment in the player experience. They're getting a new locker room, new uniforms. I think that is going to pay off huge in the coming years to where these guys who have signed with BYU are going to feel that love throughout their whole career, because that's going to become an important thing too during this era of you've got that one time you can change schools if you want to.
Yeah, having a platform, having a voice, that matters more than ever. And when you're talking about sports that have a lot of minorities in these sports, you got to give those individuals the platform to have their voice and have it be heard. I think BYU is doing a nice job with both football, men's basketball, and really all the sports. I mean, BYU's athletic department right now is running at a very high level.
Yep.
And I think it's an exciting time for Cougar fans going forward into these unique times. And then you pair it up potentially with name, image, likeness and this passionate fan base, and these student athletes can have the chance to make some money. It's definitely an exciting time for BYU sports going forward. We got to take a break, though. On the other side, we'll get to a few more transfer news and notes, but also some BYU basketball recruiting. We'll get on all that here on Cougar Sports Saturday. It's always powered by KSLSports.com. Welcome back in Cougar Sports Saturday here on KSL News Radio. It's always powered by KSLSports.com. And if you ever want to get the podcast for this show and any of our KSL Sports podcasts and any articles from KSLSports.com, go download the KSL Sports app today. It's always brought to you by University Federal Credit Union. Mitch Harper, Matt Biamonte here. We're talking transfer portal as the one-time transfers have been approved in all of college sports. And for BYU basketball, the Cougars are heavily involved in the transfer portal. There's been some BYU guys that have entered the portal, and the Cougars, of course, are looking for some guys out of that portal as well. Connor Harding, a former BYU player, he's found a new landing spot, Matt. He's headed to UVU. Is this a good fit for Connor, you think?
Yeah, I do. And it doesn't even come as a surprise. When he went to the portal, I was basically – I think we even talked about this here on the show. We were like, yeah, he's going to UVU because his wife's still going to play at BYU next year. So I don't feel like, we're all married here on the show. I wouldn't want to live away from my spouse for a whole basketball season. That would be hard. So I felt like his options were limited, knowing that Paisley Harding was going to come back to BYU. And she's not going to leave BYU because that team's good. And they're all coming back. They could do some damage in the tournament next year. So I think it is a good fit. I know that UVU needs some wings, so he'll fit in. And he's a guy, too, I think, who that was probably a tough pill to swallow, losing that role on the team, losing your starting role. I think he wants to play hoops. You can't blame a guy. UVU's got a need, and he's going to fit that need. And so it'll be fun to see him play BYU next year. So it's a good spot for Harding.
Yeah, I think so as well. And it's unfortunate because I really thought that, you know, Connor Harding was going to make a big leap forward, kind of like a Jake Toulson. Yeah. I really did. I mean, I thought he was going to make that big jump. You just saw some of the shooting percentages that he had his sophomore season that just didn't work that junior year. And then when he played against Gonzaga, the number one team in the country, and it was like 0 points, zero boards in 17 minutes of action. It was like minus 22 on the court. It was like, there's got to be a little bit of a change, a little bit of a spark in the lineup. But credit to him, though, for sticking with the team and not just entering the portal at that moment. I think Mark Pope, good, you know, point, acknowledged that on multiple occasions. Just the buy-in that he did have for the best locker room in America mantra that BYU has, he stayed with it. And he was key in a win against Pacific in a double overtime win. And he also got 21 minutes in that game against UCLA in the NCAA tournament. So hopefully it works out for Connor Harding. He's still got 2 years of eligibility left. So he's got a chance to make an impact at UVU. Mark Madsen kind of had a nice turnaround in year two. They go 11-11, had the nation's number one defensive rebounder in the country. So maybe him and Harding can form like a nice 1-2 tandem in Orem. But for BYU, the Cougars officially signed Atiki Aliatiki, and I'm very excited about this guy, Matt. 6'11" forward, originally from Tanzania, goes to Canada. Now he's headed to BYU. This is a guy that I think could play a lot of minutes early on in his BYU career. He's a hard worker, as Mark Pope mentioned in his press release yesterday when they officially announced his signing. Aliatiki turned down offers from Oklahoma and San Diego State. He's an intriguing prospect. I think his recruitment would have blown up even more had his senior year not been so heavily impacted by COVID-19 up in Canada. He would have got a lot more offers. So this is a big-time get, I think, for BYU.
Yeah, 6'11 guy. So BYU size is awesome. You get Gavin Baxter back. He's 6'9". You got Richard Harwood back, 6'11". And it's still not out of the question a certain 7-footer comes back next year. So, I mean, if he does, you're talking about an even taller team than a year ago if Matt Harms were to turn. So that's still up in the air, but it's fun to think about because if he were to return and Alex Borsello were to return, this basketball team with the experience in the tournament, that's not the experience you want to get, but it's still valuable experience. You add in a solid recruiting class with that, and then they're still dipping into the portal. Now, it hasn't quite worked out yet. Mike Saunders, who we had on last week, he's going back to Cincinnati with the coaching change. So it's going to be interesting to see who BYU lands. They've swung and missed a few times, which it speaks volumes to the program that you're actually surprised when they don't land a guy. Because it's like, oh, yeah, he's coming. Mark Pope's recruiting. We got Matt Harms. We got Alex Borsello. These guys are signing up. And now we're getting a little dose of actually what happens in college basketball where you don't get everyone that you go after. So I know that hasn't been the case, Mitch, but it's kind of felt that way for the last 2 years. So it's fun to see this roster start to take shape, but there's still a long ways to go.
Yeah, what's nice about Matt Harms and Borsello, if they did come back, they don't count against the 13 scholarships. Yep. So they would be an absolute bonus. They would count against the total roster, so maybe some walk-ons might need a gray shirt or something would need to be figured out in terms of the total number of bodies on the roster, but they wouldn't count against the scholarship count. And if you could potentially have 15 scholarship players, that alone gives you a great chance to not only return to the NCAA tournament, but maybe win a game as well. And
that's BYU, it? If they all come back, you just think they only win a singular game?
Yeah, I mean, you can't honestly expect anything more. I mean, Matt Harms has got to
You better believe you can expect something more. You're getting the defensive player in the conference back. You're getting Alex Barcelo, one of the best three-point shooters, plus all this young talent.
They were a
talent.
Sixth seed, and they got smoked.
That team went to the
11.
Final Four. They were one of that's like the
so
best
what?
11 seed in the history of college
BYU
basketball.
BYU was a huge favorite to beat UCLA. Watch, UCLA.
They couldn't hit the broadside of a barn. If BYU shoots to their average from three, they might win that game against the best 11 seed ever.
I've seen so many BYU teams, though, in the NCAA tournament go to that stage and just choke.
And you know what teams don't, Mitch? The ones that have experienced dudes, which you're talking about Barcelo and Harms, guys that have played a lot of hoops, and a lot of guys on this team were young. Loner's a sophomore. Getting George is in his second year. And you think they're going to win one game if they all come back? I can't believe it.
If BYU gets the round of 32, that is a massive accomplishment. That is
That's that's a par for the course, and I'm expecting a birdie.
No, it's not. Par for the course, bro, to the 32. BYU never gets the round of 32.
They do when they have good, experienced senior
rating
groups.
When they have the player of the year. When they have, like, the player of the year. When they have Danny Ainge or Jimmer. That's when they get to the round of 32.
I can't believe you're setting your bar this low. It's unbelievable.
I have to reevaluate. I have to recalibrate. After
UCLA was a miracle half-court shot from going maybe to the national championship game. Can we remember that fact that this was like the hottest team in college hoops?
Yeah, because they beat Abilene Christian in the second round. How convenient. BYU would have been in the Sweet 16 this past year, too.
Not the way they shot. I mean, they were so hot and cold all year. We talked about it all year. They could lose to anybody when they can't shoot the ball. They didn't shoot it. Against UCLA, they were horrible from three. That happens.
If they get Harms and Barcelo back, I'm saying round of 32. I'm saying a single-digit C.
I would if they got ousted in the round of 32. I'm ticked. I'm ticked off.
I would be thrilled.
No way.
I would be thrilled with that. I would 100% be thrilled with a round of 32 appearance. Wouldn't you?
I'd be happy, but if they got ousted at 32, I'd be ticked with 15 scholarship guys. Two bonus players who are all conference caliber guys.
I would take that in a heartbeat.
Who is this guy? Who am I hosting the show with? Where's Mitch Harper? Let me know. Text me 5750. Where'd he go? I can't find him. It's unbelievable.
I would take one win in the NCAA tournament in a heartbeat. Just give me one. Just give me one. After what I witnessed in Indy, just give me one. All right. We got to take a break, though. On the other side, we'll get to Dave McCann, KSL 5 TV. Also, he joins us, talks about BYU football, BYU basketball. We'll get to him coming up next here on Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSLSports.com. I've left, everyone!
This is Cougar Sports Saturday. Cougar Sports Saturday.
A presentation of KSL Sports.
Got it for three! Cougars by 20!
Every Saturday, all year long. BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans.
For Cougar fans. It's Cougar Sports Saturday. Here are your hosts, Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte. On your legacy home of BYU Sports. KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Welcome back in to Cougar Sports Saturday here as we're getting going. In hour number one of the show, and we've been talking about that transfer rule. And, man, we just had a good spirited argument, which I'm sure will continue. But we've got to put that argument on hold for just a minute and get out to the phone line and welcome in KSL TV5's Dave McCann to join the show. Dave, thanks for spending some time with us.
Hey, it's great. It's an honor to be right out of the gate, so thank you.
No problem. Hey, let's just start with the big news of the week. The one-time transfer exception has been granted by the NCAA, meaning they are eligible one time when they transfer. Do you think this will help or hurt BYU, Dave?
Well, I think it helps because it means Puka Nacua will be on the field against Arizona on September 4th and in the starting lineup, most likely. So I think it's good there. I kind of like it. You look at all the coach movement that we've seen, and I think it gives the players a little freedom to leave, too, and not be penalized. A coach doesn't get penalized when he leaves. He gets a raise unless he's fired. And so I think it allows the player who's in Logan to play for Craig Smith. Craig Smith leaves. They get an opportunity to go somewhere else and not have a sit-out type penalty before they can continue their college career. So it's different. It changes the game from the game we used to know, but But that's no longer the game. This is the game now, and so this is the first real taste of the transformation of college basketball as we move forward, and football for that matter.
And Dave, you mentioned Puka Nacua. I wanted to bring him up to you because, I mean, for Cougar fans that are not familiar with him, I think you're right. I think he's going to be someone that's going to make an instant impact. What are your expectations for Puka this fall now that he's cleared and eligible to play?
I think he's going to fit real nice into that offense that can run and hit the tight end and take advantage of what has become an elite, potentially elite receiving core in the country with Sampson and Puka and Gunner, if you're just picking three to start, and then you've got Pau and the others behind him. I think he's going to fit in nicely and bring a burst of speed that we just haven't had for a long, long time. We saw it when he was at Orem High. He's just faster than the others. And I was thinking, when that rule became official, I'm thinking, okay, the first play against Arizona is going to be a receiver screen to him and just let him go. And then after I was looking at all the offensive linemen coming back with their experience, I'm thinking maybe they'll go off tackle to Algier. But you got two really good options to start the game. But I think Puka brings some creativity to what they can do at the receiving core. They were going to be good anyway at receiver, and they were really good at receiver last year. He just brings that extra element, and the beauty of it is he brings 3 years with him. And so it's going to be fun to watch him settle in and get going.
We're joined by Dave McCann of KSL TV 5 here on Cougar Sports Saturday. And the one thing we don't know, now that we know that Puka is eligible and Sampson will be there as well, is who's going to be throwing these guys the football? And that's going to rage on all summer and into fall camp. We're getting little tidbits of stuff that's happening. What'd you make of seeing Jacob Conover down in Arizona training with Ty Detmer and Max Hall?
He's smart. all of us should have trained down there with those guys. He had the advantage of watching what Zach Wilson did, and why would you not follow that model? And Jake's got 4 years to figure it out. He's in the mix to start against Arizona. I think BYU could play any of those three quarterbacks, and when you look at it with the receivers we just talked about, and you get Algier and Katoa, they combine for 2,041 yards and 21 touchdowns last season. Now they come back bigger and stronger. And I think what helps the quarterback spot is the guys right up in front of them. Barrington's had 10 starts last year. Empey had 8 starts. Freeland had 8 starts. LeChance played in 11 games. Tukuafu had 4 starts, including the bowl game at center. Pay played in 8 games. Then you got Wake and Wheat, big tight end type bodies, 12 games and 10 games. And Saliapaga is back with 23 games of experience. And we're losing Brady Christensen and a couple of the others. I hear a lot of questions but about the line. It's all about the line. This offensive line might actually be the strength of this offense. And that bodes very well for which of the three quarterbacks is sitting right behind them and the running back behind them and then those receivers scattered out there. There is a reason why when you ask Kalani how he feels about the team, he smiles first and then he answers.
Dave, do you feel like Aaron Roderick is in a spot where he can't go wrong with this quarterback decision? Because I feel like these three quarterbacks, Hall, Romney, or Conover, like BYU could have a pretty successful year with any one of them. I mean, how would you kind of assess what type of decision lays in front of Roderick coming up this fall?
Well, I think you're right. I think if the game were tomorrow, well, it'd be Sunday, so it'd be unprecedented. We'd be talking about something else. But if the game was Monday, I think it would be Bayer Romney. And I would be perfectly comfortable with him on the with that group of talent. Because he executes, and Hall executes and brings a run element, and I think Conover brings a little bit of everything. So if the game were Monday night, I would be perfectly comfortable with Romney. The game's September 4th, and I'd be very comfortable with a freshman at quarterback who's beaten out the other two with that talent around him. In years past, the quarterback would have to go out and be brilliant. But he does not have to be brilliant this fall. He has to be efficient And one thing Zach did, which was really, really good, and again, as we had these conversations last year, wondering if we were going to even have a fall, we're talking about who's going to be the starting quarterback. And it wasn't a given that it was going to be Zach. We figured it probably would be, but he had to win that job. But if you just look at what Zach did in executing the offense and taking care of the football, not turning it over compared to Zach from the year before or the year before, that's how you become a number two overall draft pick. And that's the model. Don't turn the football over. Hand it to Algier. Throw it to Rex. Get it to one of the Nacuas or Romney and be protected by that big offensive line. So as far as offense, this is winning football, and I think the sky's the limit. If I could get a ticket, if I'm a BYU fan and I could get anywhere close to Allegiant Stadium in September to see that unfold, I'm there, and it's going to be fun.
How sweet was that this week to just see tickets just gobbled up in a second, and it just kind of feels like we're trending back towards regular football. And I guess the question to ask would be, what kind of scene are you expecting down in Vegas? And also along those lines, what kind of performance do you think we'll see from this team out of the gate in 2021?
Well, I'll tell you, the 3 hours after they went on sale to the public, they were gone for their allotment of 12,000, which is like a bowl allotment. And then more tickets go on sale on April 27th to the general public. I don't know what Arizona's doing with their ticket, but their last game, they got beat by 70 points, and they fired their coach. So Allegiant Stadium is ripe for a complete BYU takeover. Very similar to when we were all down in Glendale when BYU played Arizona a few years back. Back when the freshman kicker game winner, and now he's back as a sophomore 5 years later. So that's a whole other side story.
Yes.
That we've talked about before. Got to love all this COVID stuff. But but I think the scene will be very similar to when Taysom Hill took the field against Arizona in Glendale, and they ran right past me. I think Alex Curry was down there with me. They ran right past us, and the place just erupted. And I remember watching the Arizona fans who were just to my right turn their head and look around and wonder how in the world all these BYU fans showed up in Arizona for what they thought was going to be their home game. And I think Vegas is going to be twice that. I think BYU fans are nuts. They bought 12,000 tickets. They haven't bought 12,000 tickets to a football game since what, 2019? And that would have been a home game. So, like you said, Matt, the excitement in buying tickets and making plans, and I love the fact that Vegas is selling them as opposed to, well, we'll just put 2,000 out, we'll put 1,000 out. They put them all out as far as what the schools are allotted, and then the Raiders fans who have season tickets get first dibs. And so expect a lot of those tickets to come back and be made up for the general public. So I think it's going to be great. I know BYU TV, we're going to be down there, and it's going to be like the Super Bowl. More of a celebration of life, I think. But, hey, we're all back, and this is kind of how it used to be. And BYU's coming off a season that was among the best in the entire country. They sent a guy in the top of the NFL draft. The NFL Pro Day was off the charts here. For as tough of a year as it's been, it could not have been better under those circumstances for this football program. And now they march in with some momentum. So I think it's going to be exciting.
It's going to be a lot of fun. BYU definitely did win. They were a big winner amidst this pandemic, it feels like. And Zach Wilson maybe is the biggest winner of anyone in all of college football and coming up in the NFL in a few weeks with the NFL draft. Have you made peace, Dave, with the thought that Zach's going to be going to the Jets? Because I think all Cougar Nation felt like the Niners was the perfect spot, but are you coming around to having Zach in the green for the Jets?
You know, I just love when BYU graduates go out there and sign for $35 million for their first job out of school. So I'm all for it. I thought if he went to the Niners, because they were in a position, and we saw him trade up to get to number three, so they were in a position of where that would be possible, and the Jets hadn't decided what they're going to do with Darnell, but I think the Niners are built for the right quarterback can get them to the Super Bowl. The Jets are built with, they got to get the right quarterback, then they got to get 10 more good players on offense and 11 more good players on defense to have a chance. So that's kind of how I thought, hey, Zach can go there and win right away. He's going to go to the Jets and rebuild. But the pressure, you know, he's not going to the Giants. There's a weird thing about pressure in New York between the Giants and the Jets. The Jets have been bad for so long that I think if he goes and can show some signs of life while he learns, and if he can stay alive, you know, he can win over that city with his smile and how he handles the media and his skill set while they're pounding on the Giants because they're not going to be very good. And then play out your rookie contract and then go to a team that can contend. So it's not like a prison sentence where you're going to the Jets for your whole career. But you're going to start there, and they're going to make you a millionaire many times over. And the pressure won't be, hey, why didn't we get to the Super Bowl after the first season, which I think it might have been at San Francisco. We just have a chance to see more San Francisco games out in this market. Yeah. And I can't tell you the last time the Jets have been on TV in Utah. So we might have to get the football packages or something.
You can follow him at Dave McCann KSL, and we always appreciate you stopping by. We love talking to you, Dave, and thanks. We wish you a wonderful Saturday.
Thank you. We're just one Saturday closer. That's every time we get together, we're just one day closer to seeing what we love out on the football field. So my pleasure. Have a great weekend.
Take care, Dave. Amen to that. All right, we'll take a break here in Cougar Sports Saturday. We'll be back after this. Welcome back to Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSL Sports. .com. It's Matt Biamonte and Mitch Harper as we are wrapping up hour number one. And we just talked with Dave McCann. Zach Wilson's name gets brought up a lot, rightfully so, as he's likely to be the highest BYU football player ever taken in the NFL draft. Although, Mitch, he's not going to be the only guy taken. So I think we're going to see a really high number of BYU guys drafted, which we haven't seen in a long time. And one of those guys I think we expect to get drafted, maybe in the later rounds, but still a good chance to get drafted is Dax Milne. And earlier in the week, he was asked an interesting question. And if you want to let us know, you can chime in on this as well, 57500. He was asked, what is his favorite Zach Wilson throw of his career? And here's what Dax Milne had to say regarding that question.
I think it was against Western Kentucky. He rolled out right. I was on a go route on their sideline, and he rolled out opposite of me. And then I thought he was, you know, just kind of counting me out. But I just stayed running on the opposite sideline. And all of a sudden he turned and I seen the ball go up in the air. And I was like, oh, my gosh, that is the farthest throw I've ever seen. And the ball stayed in the air for forever and finally came down to me and I scored.
My question for you, Mitch, is that also your favorite Zach Wilson throw of his career?
It's up there. And that sound was courtesy of Move the Sticks podcast on NFL Network, but you know, my favorite, and it was interesting, he mentioned Western Kentucky. It was actually the Texas State game that throw happened. It was sweet. I remember watching it in the press box, and everyone in the booth was just like, wow, did that throw just really happen? It was nuts to see. But I think my favorite was probably, it involved Dax Milne as well, and of course Zach Wilson. The throw
I
at
hope
Houston.
It involves Zach Wilson.
the throw at Houston. It was the first offensive play, and it was just a deep ball. And I remember going to that Houston game, there was thoughts like maybe this is the game BYU loses. You know, maybe their undefeated season comes to an end in Texas. And first play of the game, Wilson just connects with Dax Milne. And what was great, too, about it was all the fans that were in the stands. It was the first time there had been any fans at a BYU game that season. I thought that was cool to see because usually BYU in a big game, you know, they come out slow. And that was just, again, this team's different. They are built different. And Wilson is a heck of a talent. And Dax Milne is just balling out man-to-man coverage. And he's not phased. He's going deep. And so I think that one was my favorite from Zach Wilson's career. What about you?
It's not from this last year. So I think my favorite throw. Now, there was another throw in that Houston game that I think is worth mentioning, which was the kind of the dagger also to Dax Milne, which I thought there was good coverage. Yeah. Milne had his guy beat, but it did require just an absolute accurate dime to put the game away, which he delivered, which I thought was a sensational throw. But My favorite throw, it's definitely not his most impressive or most difficult throw, but my favorite throw of Wilson's career is the throw to Simon against Tennessee. Just everything that led up to that throw, I think, just adds this element where I'll always remember it. You and I were both at that football game. That might add into it a little bit too, but that series, you got no timeouts. You get a holding penalty on the first play. He nearly avoids a sack in the end zone a play later. Bushman's got to break up an INT. All this drama, and then it's third and a mile, not a lot of time. And yes, Simon was wide open, but you still have to make the throw, and then they go on to win that football game, winning in SEC country. That was a historical moment that will stand the test of time for BYU football. So all of that for me, I think, makes it my favorite throw from Zach Wilson.
Yeah, Wilson had some good ones too in the Boca Raton Bowl against UCF. I mean, that was just that was a clinic. And I know UCF was a little bit decimated with their roster; they had some opt outs and they had some guys injured and whatnot. But still, BYU just tore that team up. Like that was expected to be this high scoring affair, and one team lived up to that end of the bargain, and BYU just completely annihilated UCF. But Wilson was spectacular. I mean, I put out a piece during the season of the 10 Heisman-worthy moments for Zach Wilson. I was looking at some of those throws, and it's just like the guy just made big-time throws. And the thing that I feel like a lot of people are continuing to knock Zach Wilson about, oh, he didn't play anyone. He didn't play any good competition. But, man, that arm strength, those arm angles, the windows, the ball placement, like you said, with that Dax Milne throw against Houston, he made a throw that only Dax Milne can make a play on. Like, yep. it was perfection. And that's the type of stuff that, regardless of who you're playing, that you would think that can translate potentially to the NFL if you can get some personnel around him. Hopefully the Jets can build a roster with all these draft picks that could put Zach Wilson in an opportunity for success right away.
Hour number one is in the books. We're going to keep talking quarterbacks, but we're going to talk the current crop. BYU quarterbacks next here as we start off hour number two. So we'll be back. More Cougar Sports Saturday here on KSL News Radio. It's powered by KSLSports.com.
This is Cougar Sports Saturday. Cougar Sports Saturday.
A presentation of KSL Sports.
Got it for three. Cougars by 20.
Every Saturday, all year long. BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans.
For Cougar fans.
It's Cougar Sports Saturday.
Here are your hosts, Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte.
On your legacy home of BYU Sports.
KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Hey, welcome back into the show. Mitch Harper here, Matt Biamonte. KSL News time, 106 PM on this Saturday afternoon. We're counting down the days, of course, to BYU football. One Saturday closer, as Dave McCann said, who was on with us earlier. And if you missed that interview, go download it today on KSLSports.com on our podcast feed. It was a great interview with Dave. And we, of course, talked about the quarterback position. And earlier this week, one of the candidates for the quarterback job is Jacob Conover. He was down in Arizona training a little bit with Max Hall and Ty Detmer. And I'm curious, Matt, did that get you excited at all about the prospects of Conover potentially winning the job maybe this fall?
No. To answer that question, did it
get you excited at all?
No, because I don't want him to win the job. I think he's going to be a great BYU quarterback. I've said this before and I'll say it again, and I believe it with every fiber in my DNA, is that you do not want to start a true freshman quarterback in college football. I just don't think you do. And I know that BYU's got the skills, they got the line, but there's not a lot of true freshman quarterbacks that just light the college football scene on fire. I want an experienced guy. So I want to see Jaren Hall or Baylor Romney for a couple years and then bring in the Conover era for 3 years, hopefully, and just keep, you know, cycling it through like that. That's just, maybe I'm old school with that. Maybe I need to be shown a different way, but that's what I believe works in college football. So that did not get me excited about him being the starting quarterback this year, but it did get me excited for Jacob Conover's future, because I think he's going to be an outstanding quarterback. And I love that these guys are training with different coaches, and just hearing a different voice and seeing how things are done from different points of view in any aspect of life is a healthy thing. It's a great thing to incorporate different things from different people that have been successful. So I love that. But to answer your specific question, no.
Man, I got to say, it got me a little bit excited. I'm not going to lie. I saw Conover working with Detmer and Max Hall. Like, I mean, you can't get better than that, right? Those are two of the all-time greats. I mean, that's, what, top five quarterbacks right there that he's working with? And those guys
awesome.
Are giving him some pointers. I mean, it's great stuff. Now, obviously, with the freshman component, it is going to be a tough hill to climb to be the week one starter. But I get this feeling, though, with Conover, that if there's anyone that can do it, it could potentially be him, just because he did run the scout team offense this past season, and he was someone that just he got his experience and see how Zach Wilson operated in that quarterback room. I mean, he even mentioned that back in March when he spoke with us in the media. He talked about how valuable that was to just see how Zach prepares and how he worked and how valuable that was. And I think it was valuable for Baylor Romney and Jaron as well. But I think for Conover, you know, he's only, four games behind Romney and Hall. Like, Hall started two games. Romney started, there's two games as well. Both guys have started two games.
Yeah, it was.
For BYU, Romney's played in four is where I was getting confused there. But, you know, there's not many starts under the belt where he's so far behind those other guys. Now, Romney's the most experienced guy, and it was interesting. You know, Dave did say if the season started on Monday, Baylor Romney would probably be the starter. But, you know, I think that Conover, to me, I think he's good enough to at least be in that maybe final two conversation with him and Jaron Hall, potentially. I think he's good enough to be in that mix.
There's no doubt he's good enough. I just strongly believe that even if it's not actual game experience, it's growing up. I mean, when you're 23 or 24 and you're 19, 20, it's just different.
He's served a mission. He's the most mature man on the face of the earth now, right?
No.
That's what the national pundits tell us. BYU's the most mature team.
I hate to burst the bubble, but it actually doesn't make you the most mature person in the world. A 21-year-old me, I think, could shock you when it comes to that regard. So, but the talent's fantastic. And look, you also just can't replicate take Baylor Romney, for instance. That Boise State game was a big deal. Let's rewind the clock and remember the circumstances. BYU was on a skid. They were losing football games. And Boise State was undefeated. And the weather was crazy. And he gets thrown into here because Jaron Hall gets hurt the week before. And he delivers. Like, that, you cannot replicate that in practice. You can't. That was great that he was here for a year. None of anything that he has done up to this point doesn't even scratch the surface for what Baylor Romney's experienced up to this point. That matters in college football. And so what I loved about Zach Wilson's career, because I know, and you know, Mitch, too, that there was a portion of the coaching staff that thought he was ready to go day one. Maybe that was the way they should go, and they didn't do it. They went with Tanner Mangum, and he learned some things, saw the game from the sidelines, hearing the play calls, all that stuff matters. And then when he got put in his freshman season, he was ready to go. He was ahead of the curve. There wasn't the deer in the headlights moment that sometimes true freshmen get in college football. And if that's what happens to Jacob Conover, sign me up. If you want to go with Romney or Hall and they don't deliver and four, five, six games in, you go to Conover and he's great, I'm all for it. I think that's a totally different circumstance from just giving the keys of the program to a true freshman right out of the gate. I don't want to see it.
Do you think, though, in this era of college football, because things have changed a lot in 3 years now, as we've talked about today, transfers have that one-time waiver. Like, they can go to another school. Like, does that play a role, you think, in this decision? Because if you got the hotshot freshman quarterback who was an Elite 11 guy, had an offer to Alabama, it's going to be the cliche thing that everyone brings up, similar to that of Tanner Mangum was co-MVP at the Under Armour All-American game with Jameis Winston. Like, that's going to be Jacob Conover's thing. Like, he had an offer from Alabama that he was in Nick Saban's office. Do you feel like that's going to play a role? Because to me, like, that's always going to weigh on the back of my mind. Like, I do not want to lose the hot shot prospect to the portal potentially. If he's like sitting at number three behind the two upperclassmen, Did he get a fair crack at it? Does he feel like he didn't get enough of a chance to really win that job? Because I feel like you got to make it all things equal right now and give every one of these guys an equal shot. And I think Conover's good enough. If it is truly equal, he's good enough to potentially win the job.
Yes. We talked to Aaron Roderick a few weeks ago, and I think Aaron Roderick is just the perfect guy to run the show right now because – I think that he can relate to these. Not that Jeff Grimes couldn't, but Aaron Roderick is younger, and I think just the way that he's explained things to us, I can imagine sitting in the quarterback room with them and having a difficult conversation. And he didn't want to give any inkling of what happened in spring because he wanted to talk to his guys, and I think that goes a long way, having that honesty and that open communication with your coach. Jacob Conover's a BYU guy. I mean, there was did he tweet this or someone tweeted, I can't remember, a picture of him as a little kid in the Lavelle Edwards Stadium in the last week. Like, I don't think that's an issue with him, especially if you say you're the guy and if someone's hurt, it could be your show, but we want to get you ready for 2023 or whenever it is, and you're going to have 3 years. I think it's more of a risk for Romney than Hall than it is for Conover at this point.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I mean, where do you feel like you're at right now with this quarterback race? Do you feel like it's still Hall?
I would still lean Jaren Hall. I just think I keep coming back to this, and Baylor Romney can do a little bit of it, but Aaron Roderick wants this offense to do as many of the things that you saw last year as possible. And there's one guy that meets that criteria, I think, perfectly, and that's Jaren Hall. I just think Zach Wilson had, 15 rushing touchdowns. He had the dual threat ability. So can Jaren Hall. And that's not to say that Romney and Conover can't move. They're not statues. I mean, these guys are athletic, but not to Hall's point of view. I think it is. I would still lean Jaren Hall by a hair, but there's no doubt I think we're sleeping on Romney a little bit. What do you say?
I think so. I mean, I think that Jaren Hall, I think, Aaron Roderick had a conversation with us before spring ball, and he said, Jacob Conover's arrival last fall was maybe kind of changed a little bit of the master plan, if you will. Yeah. And I, try to read into that and think, what does that master plan look like? I think in a best case scenario, it's Jaren Hall for 3 years, because keep in mind, if you noticed, he just recently got granted a medical redshirt. So now he's a redshirt sophomore this year. Jaren Hall is going to have 3 years of eligibility to go forward and be the starter potentially. So something that's kind of interesting. He got a medical redshirt granted to him, for last season, so it didn't even factor. I mean, he already had the free year, of course, but he's a redshirt sophomore. Pretty amazing how that works. And I think in a best-case scenario, he's your starter for 2 or 3 years, and then Jacob Conover is the starter for 2 years in that master plan. And how Romney fits into that, I don't know.
Here's how he fits in, Mitch.
I feel like Hall and Conover just have the higher ceilings potentially. I feel comfortable with Romney winning a lot of games for BYU, but I feel like there's this intriguing next level type talent aura to Hall and Conover that you want to kind of scratch the surface and see what else is there with those guys potentially. That's what kind of piques my interest.
Here's how I think Romney fits in. I think it's very realistic to assume that if Jaren Hall is named the starter, you probably won't get a full year with him. Now, knock on wood, cross your fingers, that's not the case, because when BYU gets a full year with the starting quarterback, they're pretty dang good at football. But I think it's reasonable to say, hey, sorry you're not starting, but we know that Jaren Hall has had some injury issues. You could be ready to go at any moment. Or if he doesn't perform, you're ready to go. So just because you're not named the starter in college football, history would say, especially in the past 5 years, the backup quarterback is going to play some football.
Yeah, in BYU's case, sometimes the third and fourth string.
Soul Jay, get stay ready.
Jake Jensen, get ready. Oh, Ray Riley, are you ready on deck? Quarterback number 7. What was it? In 2017, they played who? They had Tanner Mangum.
Hodge.
They had Bo Hodge. Coy Detmer Jr. Didn't he get some run?
He did get some run.
And then Joe Critchlow.
Yep.
Was there anyone else?
So we got Tanner, Critchlow, Bo, I think that was it. I think Critchlow finished out the year, but 4 dudes. And I don't think Joe was on scholarship then.
No, he was like on an academic scholarship, and then he got an athletic scholarship after.
What happened to Joe, really quickly? Speaking of the transfer portal, I'm dying to know. Where did
he had a little bit of interest from Jim McElwain at Central Michigan, but never ended up anywhere. Smart kid, tremendous in his academics. He already graduated from BYU, of course, but didn't find a landing spot, which is a bummer, you know, because he was – he had some moments. I mean, didn't Ed Lamb once say he was going to be the next great BYU quarterback? He was you know, we could maybe take that one back a little bit. Anyway, got to take a break, though. On the other side, we're having a good time today on this Saturday afternoon here on Cougar Sports Saturday. The top BYU football players of the last 20 years. Let's get to that next. It's Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSLSports.com.
Welcome back to Cougar Sports Saturday. It's Matt Biamonte and Mitch Harper here. Hope you're having a wonderful Saturday, mid-April Saturday, blue skies, good weather. Crazy week with all the rain, much needed, so I'm not complaining, but it's nice to have some blue skies back in the mix. Mitch, we had a healthy argument earlier. This has been we agree a lot on the show. If you've been listening for the last, can't believe it's almost been 2 years too, but what are we at, like 22 months, Mitch and I here on Cougar Sports Saturday, but we agree a lot. We basically were raised the same child, Lakers fans, NCAA, inputting our own rosters, drinking Mountain Dew. So we see things similar a lot, and today that just has not been the case. It's been crazy. So we want to get to a couple of your guys' texts here. Here's a good one. 13-15, loving the show, but you guys got to admit, BYU Hoops never gets to the Sweet 16. So here's the argument. Here's the argument. And there's another one coming in here, too, from 7146. I appreciate this. Anytime people go at me, I appreciate it. Matthew is up in the night. The standard and expectation is nowhere near the Sweet 16. Round of 32 would exceed all standards BYU has. They've only gone to the Sweet 16 two freaking times. And even going to the round of 32 has happened only a few more times than that. That's all true. Those are facts. But you know what's also a fact, Mitch? Defensive player of the year is back on the roster. Caleb Lohner, an outstanding freshman, is a year wiser, a year older, more in the program, getting George ready. Trevin Nell came on big. If you get Alex Barcella back, you got that leadership. You got the Bulldog, the three-point shooting. Gavin Baxter's backup injury. I mean, this is a loaded team. You said it yourself. They'd have 15 scholarship quality guys, and you think the round of 32 is the best they could do? It just blows my mind.
Yeah, I mean, look, if they get Harms and Barcello back,
that's what I'm assuming here.
Yeah,
think 32?
If they get those guys back, my expectation is they get to the round of 32, and that's not a bad thing, Matt. That's what I'm trying to explain. Like, that would be a great BYU basketball season. You got to think they have only got to the round of 32. The last time they got to the round of 32 was Jimmer's senior year. It just doesn't happen often. And then you got to go back to 2010, Jimmer's sophomore or junior year. That happened.
Round of 32.
Prior to that, you got to go to the 90s, like 1993 before 2010. Like, that just, there's only 3 years since 1993 that it's happened. They got to the round of 32.
Those teams didn't have the guys like Richard Harward and Spencer Johnson. They didn't have those guys coming off the bench. Guys that won basketball games a year ago. They didn't have that. They didn't have the depth. I mean, you couldn't even name the guys 10 through 15 on the roster. That's my point. You got the experience plus the depth plus the talent, and you're saying round of 32?
After what I saw in Indianapolis,
you're jaded.
I would be thrilled with round of 32.
You're jaded. It's not BYU basketball's fault you overpacked for that trip, Mitch.
Okay, that's a good point. No, but like, come on. Like, the stage looked a little big for BYU in that moment.
Of course it did. That was Coach Pope's first toe dip in the tournament. Alex Barcello had never played in the tournament meaningful. I know he went there with Arizona, but none of those guys had played meaningful minutes. That's not a problem. This year, you've got that sour taste. And how often in times have we seen in basketball where teams get all the way to the goal, but they don't achieve the goal, and that fuels them the next year to having an even better year, to going deeper, further? That's what happens to this year's team. If you get Harms and Barcello back, there's a chip on the shoulder where they're like, hey, great year last year, but man, we blew it in the tournament. We're going deep. We're going far. And then we got Mitch here saying, as soon as you win that first game, pack it up and go home.
If you get one win, that would be an amazing season. Now, let me ask you this, Matt. If they don't get Harms and Barcello back, which is possible too, I think both guys
yes.
could just move on. And I feel like they should come back.
They
run
should.
It back one more time, because I'm telling you, if I could get to Harms and Barcilla, guys, the NBA draft is not calling a name. I don't feel like the two-way contract is waiting for them either.
No.
And Europe will be there for those guys.
Yes.
It's going to be there one more year from now. Like, come back to BYU, run it back. Hopefully name, image, likeness comes about so they can maybe make some money while they're at BYU this next year. That would be a nice little wrinkle. But anyway, if they don't come back, do you still feel like the expectation should be second weekend? Because I feel like then
no.
it would be just recalibrated to just get to the NCAA
yes,
tournament.
Yes, absolutely. They don't come back, get to the NCAA tournament, build upon that. One other note on Barcelo and Harms. You touched on Europe. Can we remember we're in a pandemic? Like, overseas basketball is not what it is. Like, I just don't think the opportunities and the money are as rich as maybe we think it is. Whereas, if you put the pandemic a year in the rearview mirror, maybe that returns. And there's some good money deals there. But European basketball is not what we think it is right now in the pandemic. So I think that's another reason where it's like maybe the money you thought you'd get by even going overseas, that might not be there right now. But BYU Hoops is there. And if you go on a special run, like I think you can with the experience and depth, then maybe you do get a two-way contract and an opportunity to play in the NBA. They got to come back.
I think so too, and you know, we don't know what it's like to be a student athlete, college athlete. I mean, you still got to go to school. I would imagine if you did come back another year, but hey, that's maybe a free year to get towards your master's. Like that's not a bad thing.
No.
You know, that would be good. And then also, but you know, Mark Pope is a player's coach, but he's pretty tough too. Like he's not. It's not easy to be a BYU basketball player. I think a lot of people see the fun side of Mark Pope. The guy. You know, is energetic as all get out, and I think all of Cougar Nation should breathe a sigh of relief that Arizona did not come calling for him, because I really felt like had Tommy Lloyd turned that down, I think Mark Pope could have potentially been next in line. So I think it's a sigh of relief for Cougar Nation. But Mark Pope, you know, is tough. He's got a high demand of what he expects from these guys, and I think they're all willing to buy in. But maybe, you know, Harms and Barcelli just want to move on and see what the next chapter is, whether it's Europe or whatever it may be. They're at peace maybe with where they are. Who knows? I hope they come back, though, because I think the little bit of the teasing on social media, you got to just give an answer now. You got to just kind of give some sort of resolution so Cougar fans can move forward. But if I'm Mark Pope and I'm constructing this roster right now, I'm kind of just looking at them as a bonus. And that's what they really would be, because they wouldn't count against the scholarship limit. They would just be truly a bonus. And I think that's why go try to get Jordan Goldwire from Duke. Maybe go get Kirk Kreisha potentially from Arizona. Maybe you can get in the mix for Mac McClung potentially if he pulls out of the NBA draft process. I would be you would have loved Mac McClung?
No,
I
wouldn't.
Yeah, Mac McClung, you're going to Sweet 16. How about that?
Oh, yeah, right. You got to be kidding me. That's what Texas Tech thought, too.
They were in a tough draw. They had a tough draw.
Oh, my goodness. This is unbelievable. This is unbelievable coming from you. They had a tough draw. You know how to tough draw BYU. They played a team that almost went to the national championship.
UCLA is a fraud.
Oh,
it's a fraud.
I can't believe I'm hearing this.
Everyone's labeling them preseason number one.
Hey,
they will not live up to it next year.
If I get on the doorstep of reaching all the goals I've set for my life and I just come up one short and I get labeled a fraud, sign me up. I want to be a fraud then. If I can achieve everything but that last thing.
Hawkins and Tiger Campbell and Juzang, they worked their tails off for a month in Indy. It's not going to translate to big-time success next year. I'm telling you, they're going to have more expectations. It's not going to carry over next year.
It's carrying over. They're going to be a one seed next year. Pencil it down, Dallin. UCLA, a one seed in the 2022 Selection Sunday. That's a guarantee.
A seven seed. How about that? There's a lot better teams in the Pac-12 next year.
Oh, jeez. All right, we got to take a break. On the other side, of course, as always, the top five. Back after this.
This is Cougar Sports Saturday. Cougar Sports Saturday.
A presentation of KSL Sports.
Got it for three! Cougars points winning!
Every Saturday, all year long. BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans.
For Cougar fans.
It's Cougar Sports Saturday.
Here are your hosts, Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte.
Legacy home of BYU Sports.
KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Welcome back, Cougar fans, into Cougar Sports Saturday here on KSL News Radio. Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte. We're having a fun show. We're at the midway point, and at this point of the show, you know what it is. We always get to our favorite segment of the program. It's the Top 5.
The Cougar Sports Saturday Top 5. Mitch and Matt clash in a weekly battle of BYU sports knowledge. The Cougar Sports Saturday Top 5.
Yeah, it's Top 5, always brought to you by Economic Partners, Utah's premier business valuation and strategic consulting firm. They're by Cougar fans who are BYU MBAs, so got to get it. If you need a business evaluation, contact econpartners.com today. That's Economic Partners, Utah's premier business evaluation. We'll bring in the maestro of the Top 5, our producer, Dallin Graff. Dallin, how's your Saturday going, and what's on deck today?
Oh, it's going great. Much nicer weather now than it was a little bit earlier, and hopefully that continues, because I'm ready for spring. I'm ready to go golfing more often, and you just can't do that when it's cold and windy and rainy.
Mitch, I just saw something interesting. I think this will interest you, because I think we might need Econ Partners to get in here. I saw Dallin deliver the list. It's on a yellow sticky note. I've never seen this process before, but I'm worried there might be some tampering happening from when it goes from production to the board op. I'm not accusing you, Dave Meekham, our board op, but that was interesting. I feel like we need an Econ partner, somebody, a third party, to put that in an envelope, seal that envelope, and deliver it to our board op.
I will
like that idea.
I will say, though, for the first time probably actually ever, Board Op Dave has influenced this list, but it is in a good way.
Whoa.
It's in a very good way because, you know, I don't know everything.
very humble.
You know, John Daddy number one.
Yeah, you know. Dave helped me find a player I might have missed. So this he has actually influenced it for probably the first time
Dave
ever.
Dave is so satisfied over here. This is you're missing out, Mitch.
This is great. Today, guys, you know, you mentioned earlier the addition, the official, you know, news of Atiki Ali Atiki signing with BYU. You know, this is a player that hails from Tanzania. And Mitch, you mentioned in your article, you write up on KSLSports.com, BYU basketball will now have three players from Africa on next year's roster. You have Atiki, who's from Tanzania, Fus Traore, who is coming from Wasatch Academy. He is from Mali. And then, obviously, Gideon George from Nigeria originally. And there's, you know, a real sort of international flair with this BYU team and Mark Pope and his staff's recruiting over the last couple years. So we're going to take a look back at the top five international players in BYU basketball history. And there are some of the best players BYU's ever had, exist on this list, not from the United States of America. So it'll be a fun list. That is the only thing. They just got to have been born somewhere else, and we're looking at the best of the best. Any questions before we jump in?
No. I think this will be fun.
I like
okay.
this.
Okay. All right. We're going to start with Mitch this week. Mitch, what do you got?
I'm going to go with the most influential international player ever, Kresimir Kocic.
Yeah.
I mean, this is easy. Became only the second international player ever elected to the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame in 1996. He was incredible during his time at BYU. I mean, you look at these numbers, 22 points a game, 12 boards. He was just a force to be reckoned with, hailed from Yugoslavia, Croatia, at the time Yugoslavia, but he was a fantastic player for BYU. And like you said, extremely influential in not only his game, but what it meant as an international player and the sort of attention that he got.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting. Prior to coming to working here at KSL the last 2 years, I really never seen a Kresimir Kocic game, but we're fortunate with the KSL Sports Archive. We have it's big, it's robust. The archive of BYU content at KSL Sports, and you know, watching some of the highlights of Kresimir Kocic back in the day, like that guy could ball, and he was an active member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and just a great ambassador for BYU both on and off the court, and you know, had a tragic passing far earlier than anyone would expect it, you know, with such a great life. But, Kocic, a BYU legend. His jersey hangs up in the rafters. So, yeah, easy pick there.
Okay, Matt, to you.
I'm going to go with the former top 10 NBA draft pick that unfortunately didn't pan out. But nevertheless, I think he was still a good BOU player. Let's go. I always forget how to say his first name here. Hafa Araújo.
Yes, I'm not going to try the pronunciation just to not mess it up, but hails from Brazil, and as you mentioned, Matt, I mean, he was a great player at BYU, two seasons with the Cougars. He was the Mountain West Player of the Year 2003-2004 that year. He put up 18 points a game, 10 boards, went on to the NBA. You know, the career wasn't quite maybe what you had hoped, but he was a fantastic player at BYU, and again, you know, a guy who brought a lot of attention coming from, you know, overseas. So,
you know, it's funny. My favorite memory of Hafa was actually before he actually played a game at BYU. I was in BYU basketball camp. It was a BYU summer camp, which, by the way, folks, sign up your kids at BYU summer camps. Those are going to be pretty sweet this year. But, you know, I was at summer camp, and he was, like, in this recruiting battle with BYU and UNLV, and I go up to Coach Cleave in a break. Like, this is just how my mind worked back then. It's just, even as a kid, like, this is just some weirdo like this. I'm like, Coach, are you guys getting this Rafael Araújo guy? Like, are you getting him from are you guys getting him over UNLV? And he's like, he's like, who? Like, oh, he's like, he tells me, Hafa. I'm like, oh, that's how you say his name, Hafa? I'm like, oh, are you going to get him? Like, I'm hearing great things. He's we're still pretty good.
Oh, jeez. Rafael Araújo.
But it was a play, because I was, like, in the moment of Carlos Araújo back in the day of jazz fame.
Yes,
I was like,
yes.
You know, so, yeah, totally botched the name. I wouldn't make that mistake now with pronunciations. I know my Ali Atiki. Like, I'm getting that pronunciation right. I'm much more seasoned in that regard over the years. But, yeah, Hafa was a beast.
All right, 1-1, and we're back to Mitch here. What's your next guess?
Let's get a go with, let's see here. I'm trying to think.
Oh, no. We're already to that point. We're trying to think.
Let's see here. Let's go with, I feel like I bring him up every time we have a basketball segment on this.
Nate Cole?
Jimmy Balderson?
Yes.
From Canada.
Mitch, I can't believe you forgot this guy. I just can't believe you forgot a fellow Lakers fan, Jonathan Tavernari.
Oh, jeez.
What? Oh, my. That's it.
The Brazilian bomber?
JT just misses out on this. Just misses out. And you can make an argument that if he'd on here, he's kind of towards the end.
I'm toast then. If he's not on the list, I'm dead.
Oh, well, this is the Dave influence. The Dave influence is coming
in. He bumped Tavernari from the list. I can't believe this.
I've said this name before a couple times, and I got it. He was a WAC Player of the Year. Timo Saarelainen. Boom!
Yes, and
let's
this
go.
Is the name that our board op Dave, and, you know, Dave's a little older than I am, right? Like, I'm kind of, new to all of this. And this is, you know, Danny Ainge era. Timo Saarelainen, the 1984-85 WAC Player of the Year. 22
That's
points
fair.
A game. I mean, he was a fantastic finish from Helsinki, Finland. 6'6" forward. Timo.
He's kind of in that same realm. Like, if you asked any BYU basketball fan, like, name the conference player of the years over the years. You'd probably say Jimmer. You'd say Danny Ainge.
Yep.
You'd probably even say Kyle Collins or Tyler Haws. Very few are pulling Timo Saarelainen or, like, Keena Young. Like, he's kind of in that same realm where it's like he kind of gets forgotten a little bit, but yeah, in the 80s he was balling. I think that was like his only year too where he really popped.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All the other years were kind of just pedestrian like numbers, but that senior year he was fantastic under Liddell Anderson.
Absolutely. All right, Matt,
that was fair. Let's just say that Dave, that was legit. That needed to happen. Oh man. I can't think of anyone better than Jonathan Tavernari, which is a problem. So, I don't know. Keena Young, I think he was from America, though.
Keena Young, he came to BYU because of Kendrick Perkins going to the NBA. Remember that?
Yes, that's great.
Bob Knight said, I'm not keeping your scholarship now that Kendrick Perkins not coming to Texas Tech. Anyway, let's see here. I'm trying to think. This is wrong, but Vuk Ivanovic. Remember him, Matt?
Yes. How about my favorite role player from the Jimmer era who banked in a corner three, which is very difficult to do, Charles Abuo?
Ooh. Oh, good pull.
Okay, yeah, so- hold on a second. How the heck is he on the list over Jonathan Tavernari?
Yeah, that's kind of weird right there.
You know, it's a little, it's, you know, you could kind of, you could make an argument either way. I think.
No,
I think
you could close. Only make one argument. Tavernari, man. That was like the, is he the best sixth man in the history of BYU Hoops?
He's up
That's
there.
Probably, I mean, if he did win, what, sixth man of the year in the, wasn't that an award in the Mountain West?
I'm just afraid we're going to tweet out this top five and he's going to be.
He's going to kill us.
He's going to just tweet us every day.
And I did think about that, making this list. I was like, he's active on Twitter, and if he ever catches wind of this, I don't want to cause an issue. But Charles Abuo,
yes.
By the way, Ivory Coast, you know, was a great international player, played with their national team quite a bit, and he was a solid player at BYU and a solid role player at that. So.
Yeah, I agree with that. He was a good defender, too.
Yeah, no doubt. Okay, we're tied 2-2. There's one guy left.
Oh, man.
We go back to Mitch. Can you seal it here?
No.
I'm struggling a little bit here. Gosh, I feel like I'm missing someone that was recent. I feel like let's see here. It's always like in Family Feud, you don't want to be the person to like just say nothing and then get a big X. Like, you got to say something. Just go to Matt. I'll pass here. I'm drawing a blank. This is unlike me.
Chase Fisher, who's an American.
Let's see here. There's some guys in the 90s, too.
Think Cleve recent, got some... guys. Think recent.
Okay, recent.
Yes.
Okay, recent.
Recent.
Recent players in the best international guys. Let's see. Eric Mika from Italy.
Gideon George. It's too recent, okay? All right. Too recent. Jeez.
Who are we missing? This is going to drive me nuts. There's always this one basketball guy that just...
Who's the new Nate Call?
In the weeds. let's go with... Ben Murdoch.
You know, this is the one I thought you guys would get. This is honestly one of the easier answers on here.
Are you kidding me?
Mitch pulled out Timo Seralainen, and you guys can't get this guy. This is incredible.
This is one of the easier ones? Oh, my goodness. Let's go with, Yoli Childs. He's an American.
Yeah, he's from South Jordan, born and raised. Holy cow, what are we missing here? Let's go with...
This is killing me that it's recent.
Let's go with...
Oh my goodness, this is brutal. What is happening?
Tyler Oz. We've talked about him on the show already. Okay, we have mentioned this player on the show already.
Today?
Yes, today.
Wait, what?
We've mentioned him. Oh my goodness. I can't believe Matt Harms. Yes, let's go.
Oh,
Matt,
yes.
Come on. Yes.
You guys are going to get. And Matt pulls out Matt Harms. Yes. The Netherlands.
Hold on here. And that should not have happened on that. It should have came back to me because I started with this. I was the first of the round. It should not have been.
We're running out of time. Anything goes.
For like 5 minutes.
The tea should not have been given to Matt Biamonte. Is it because of a name thing? Is that what I'm understanding here, Dallin?
Hey, I should have won anyways with Jonathan Tavernari, so I feel good about this.
Holy cow.
Matt Harms.
Gosh.
WCC Defensive Player of the Year. And, you know, it's funny. BYU fans, it feels like a lot of it is Matt Harms wasn't very good last year. And I think there was high expectations. But he had a solid season. I mean, he turned it on as of late. That second half of the season post-injury was much better. And if he comes back and plays next year for BYU, I think he'd even more solidify his spot on this list and could really have the impact BYU
How did I lose a top five where I pulled Team O'Sara line?
I don't know.
Great question.
Holy cow.
Incredible stuff.
And I forgot the guy from Netherlands that just played a month ago.
Yeah, I know.
Holy cow.
Matt Harms, we'll never forget your name again if you come back. That's our pledge from Cougar Sports Saturday. We'll never forget it again. I'm just going to take this moment quickly, guys, before we get to break. And we got to also shout out Econ Partners. As always, if you need a business valuation, check out econpartners.com. But, guys, it's been 2 years and 4 days since I've been on Cougar Sports Saturday. So I just want to take this moment in victory to thank Dallin Graff, Dave Meekum, Mitch Harper, of course, Alex Carey, all those who have allowed me to live a childhood dream here on Cougar Sports Saturday. It's been a blast. We're not going anywhere. Bigger things are coming on Cougar Sports Saturday, but I've enjoyed it. I got the picture earlier this week. I took a selfie outside Broadcast House on day one. I'm like, wow, 2 years goes by fast. So thanks to you all who I work with and also the listeners. It's been a fun ride.
That's awesome. Congrats on that anniversary, Matt. And we got more Cougar Sports Saturday coming up after this. We'll talk some more BYU hoops and some transfer news here on Cougar Sports Saturday.
Welcome back to Cougar Sports Saturday. It's Matt Biamonte and Mitch Harper here as we just wrapped up a crazy top five. Texture 1138. Fire Dallin. No way. JT all the way. Let's consider Harms if he comes back another year. I think Harms should have been on the list, period.
Ooh, okay.
I think we agree. We can all agree, all three of us. Obuo should have been bumped to six.
Yeah. I think I can make a case for Obuo over Harms.
For the just argument. The duration of time at BYU?
Yeah, maybe just the amount of time he clocked out, you know?
Oh, jeez. The brought the lunch pail to Provo for 4 long years, grinding down at the Marriott Center.
He was part of the winningest stretch of BYU basketball. Like, he's part of the winningest senior class in BYU basketball history. There's something to be said about that.
And that class also led BYU into a long NCAA tournament drought, too. So that's something to consider as well.
That is fair. We got a good tweet, too, from BYU Swag, talking about our top five. Kresimir Kostic, I didn't realize this. He was a self-proclaimed atheist when he arrived at BYU. Kresimir Kostic converted to the LDS Church. He later translated the Book of Mormon and the Doctrine and Covenants of the Church into Croatian. Did not realize
that. Wow, that is amazing.
That was a cool tweet from BYU Swag. So,
that is cool.
BYU Swag bringing the swag on this Saturday afternoon about Kresimir Kostic. Very cool.
I like this text here. And you can chime in all show long, 57500. We want your thoughts on the transfer rule, thoughts on maybe Zach Wilson's best throw of his career. But I love what 1315 says here. UCLA overrated? Bro! Exclamation point. That's right, Mitch. Come on. Mitch literally said a 7 seed next year. And I wrote, we're keeping a historical record of that. So in 11 months' time, we're circling back around to that. That's crazy.
Just because you're good for a month for 3 weeks doesn't mean it's going to translate over the course of an entire season. Where were they in the season?
Their best player was injured, too.
Where was Tiger Campbell in the season?
The Pac-12,
they got hot at the right time, man.
Hey, look, the Pac-12 is very dysfunctional. It was a hard year in that conference. So once they got out of Pac-12 play, they just blossomed. So
I'm not buying it yet.
The Pac-12 held them down, Mitch. The Pac-12 held them. It was too dysfunctional.
I will say I'm not buying the hype on Gonzaga either next year. I think they're going to still be the clear-cut team in the WCC, number one, probably still top five in the college basketball rankings. But feel like they're going to be number one.
How do you like this? If Barcelona and Harps come back, BYU WCC champs. I'm feeling it.
You know what? I would like that, but I still would be very hesitant.
Tommy Lloyd's gone. Their international recruiter, gone. Speaking of international, that's the guy. The guy who took the Arizona job, Tommy Lloyd. That's the dude who was instrumental in bringing in the Timmies, in bringing in the Ajayis, bringing in the Petrusev, all the Olynyk, all these dudes. Sabonis. He's gone.
Yeah.
Kind of interesting.
That's going to be something that will be, hopefully, maybe can have a power shift, maybe, potentially, in the WCC. But I still think Gonzaga's still going to be the top dog. And, you know, no pun intended. But I think that they're going to be that top team, and BYU hopefully can be in that mix to win a title eventually soon. in the WCC. Coming up next, though, we got an exciting guest coming on board. Former Oregon State cornerback, now member of the BYU football team, Caleb Hayes, joins the show to discuss why he's transferring to BYU and his role that he'll have this season. Caleb Hayes next here on Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSLSports.com.
This is Cougar Sports Saturday. Cougar Sports Saturday.
A presentation of KSL Sports.
Got it for three! Cougars by 20!
Every Saturday, all year long. BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans.
For Cougar fans.
It's Cougar Sports Saturday.
Here are your hosts, Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte.
On your legacy home of BYU Sports.
KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Welcome on in to Cougar Sports Saturday and Cougar Tracks here on KSL News Radio and KSLSports.com. The BYU football offseason continues to roll on. We're counting down the days to BYU in Arizona. And what's exciting about this year in college football is that the NCAA is allowing transfers to be immediately eligible. One time, they don't get, it's just a one-time waiver, but it's an exciting thing for a handful of transfers joining the BYU football team this year. And one of those guys is Oregon State transfer Caleb Hayes, who joins us now on the program. And Caleb, welcome on into the show.
Thank you, Pink. I appreciate it.
And first off, welcome to BYU. You know, a little bit about, kind of curious to dive into your path to BYU, but how did you become aware of the Cougars when you hit the transfer portal?
So I already knew about BYU and everything when I was in high school and all that. They were trying to recruit me. However, I went to Oregon State. So now with the connections of, I already know Coach Gilford and all that, you know, it was just a no-brainer for me to just, you know, come here, because it was already a choice. Man, I always have been thinking about coming to BYU for the longest. So, you know, like, I'm just glad, like, you know, it just came, it just came back another path, you know.
And Coach Gilford, he's got a lot of connections in Southern California, so he was recruiting you in that class of 2017 then.
Yes, sir.
Talking with Caleb Hayes here on KSL News Radio. Let's take it back to your high school career. You were an offensive player. You're going to be playing defense for BYU in the secondary, but in high school, you were a prolific offensive player. How was your high school career? How would you describe that?
Yeah, I was a quarterback I actually transferred to San Jose and all that when I was a junior, and I played quarterback all throughout my high school. So yeah, it was good. It was fun and all that. Like, you know, we won state that year, my last senior year, or not say this CIF and all that. So yeah, like, you know, and then coming into college, like, I was recruited as an athlete, but I knew I was going to be playing corner at Oregon State.
Talking with Caleb Hayes here, the newest BYU commit to the BYU football program here on KSL News Radio. And so you pick Oregon State out of high school. As we discussed, BYU was in the mix. How close was that decision? Was it kind of like a leading up to signing day? How close was it for you in regards to BYU coming out of high school?
It was very close. So I was committed to Oregon State when then BYU came. So I'm always a guy that, you know, if I'm committed, that's just where I'm going to go, and that's where I'm going to be playing at. If anything ever happens, then that's what it is. But, like, you know, I'm always like, okay, like, this is my decision. You know, I'm a man of my word. I'm going to come over here. So, you know, the same situation with BYU. Like, I'm a man of my word. And, you know, I'm coming over here, and I'm going to compete. And I'm going to, like, you know, put my all into it.
You go to Corvallis, stayed true to your commitment, as you mentioned. You go to the Oregon State. I believe Gary Anderson was still there at the time when you signed. Redshirted your first year with Oregon State. What was the experience like in the Pac-12 and up in Corvallis?
So my redshirt year, like, you know, that was a more of a learning experience mentally and physically and all that, and learning the position. Throughout the time being in at Corvallis, learning, like, you know, the position and playing against, like, you know, Pac-12 competitors. Like, it was more of a shock because, you know, it's fast. They throw, they run, like, they do it all. And, like, you know, the schemes is always different. So it was great. It was great. It was a great experience. And I'm glad that even I'm transferring, like, you know, I still get that experience since most of our games is Pac-12 based. So I'm kind of comfortable with that matchup. So, yeah, it's all good. It's all good. I feel good. And, yeah, man.
And you had your kind of breakthrough in terms of playing time in your redshirt freshman season in 2018. And you've always been known as a guy that has got a ton of speed, got great athleticism. What maybe started to click for you as you learned that cornerback position and for in that 2018 season?
So, like you said, like, you know, my athleticism takes me a lot of ways, thank God. And I guess just me competing, just, like, you know, with a lot of reps and a lot of, like, consecutive, like, you know, time and play and just getting just comfortable. I feel like every game, every practice, like, I just felt more and more comfortable, and I started to use more of the technical aspects of it instead of my athleticism. Like, you know, my athleticism was going to take me so far, and I feel like, you know, if I'm able to learn and be natural with just being like the peer, like a peer corner, it takes me, like, you know, farther than where I am right now. So even till now, like, you know, I'm still learning of it. However, I am very comfortable with corner, but, like, you know, just like I said, like, learning new things is always great for me. So, yeah.
With you now committed to BYU, it's public, it's out there in the open. You go in the transfer portal back in January. Was Coach G just right there day one when you hit that portal? What was this experience like?
So going into the transfer portal, like, you know, it's always a scary situation because, like, you never know. Like, there's always, like, this, like, a mental block. It's like, you know, like, should I do this? Should I do not? Sure. But I'm talking to family and friends, and, like, even them coaches, like, you know, like, sometimes you got to put yourself out there, and, you know, God will come and, you know, bring you blessings. So I'm just glad that I knew new Coach G, or Coach Guilford, anyways. And hopefully, like, you know, I prayed and hope, like, you know, they see the potential and to see, like, my work ethic and, like, how I'm very determined to be great in this for this game and just life in general, on and off the field. And I'm just truly blessed, and I'm just happy that I have this opportunity, man. And I'm excited.
What do you love about the game of football the most?
Everything. I love winning. I love winning with my teammates. I love the competitiveness. I love the aggressiveness. I love, man, like, it's when you in the game, it's just like nothing else matters. You're just in the moment, and it's just you just love that. You love everything about it. Win, lose. Like, I don't like to lose, but, like, you know, even those lose experiences, like, that's just building character as a man, as a person, and, like, you know, and it just shows, you know, like, you know, I'm repping something behind my back and my name, my last name and all that. So, you know, I like to make my family proud in every way. And, you know, just, it brings out great opportunities in your life. Like, you know, even if, like, you know, things, like, you know, don't go my way, like, you know, football, in a way, will still always be there. And, you know, it's just, you know, I was born in it, I feel. And, like, dude, I'm gonna keep living through it.
Talk with Caleb Hayes here, you know, you mentioned your family. I wanted to bring that up. You know, has your family had, you know, connections to the game of football? Have you kind of had some influences in your family? Have they played college sports? Any family members play at the collegiate level or professionally?
Good question. I have 14 siblings, and that became that's from my dad's side and all that. I know, my older brother played basketball, probably not college level. Probably like, he has, but not like a D1 or like whatever. Still like, you know, still great opportunity for him. Yeah. He don't play no more. And I have another brother who lives in Louisiana at the moment. He used to play, but now he stopped. So honestly, I'm probably the only sibling and boy that plays like, you know, at the higher collegiate level right now. My stepdad actually put me into football when I was young. So, yeah, that's how it started.
That's cool. And you know, with the portal, was there other schools that reached out to you, or was kind of BYU the place that you always thought, you know, was always in the back of your mind? What was some of the other schools that reached out to you?
Yeah, there was many other schools that reached out to me and all that, but like, it was such a quick no-brainer decision for me to like come to a BYU. Like, you know, I already committed like in January, and like I put my name in the portal in January, you know, and like in like 2-3 weeks I'm already like I was already like, you know, fixated and committed to BYU and all that, since me and Coach Guilford talked like, you know, every week about my decision and all that, and like, you know, this is really what it is. And I say like, yeah, this is what it is. So there's, and that's the thing, like, you know, I never knew how much colleges would reach out, like, you know, on social media. Like, you know, I'm not really a big social media guy unless it's like it's Instagram, but even so, like, I even post like time to time, and it'll be like family or something like that. But yeah, like I was already fixated on BYU. So all the other colleges, like, I didn't really like pay no mind, or I'll tell them like, yeah, I'm committed, like, even for them not knowing. So I guess that's all me though.
What's some goals that you have in your BYU career, and maybe just in your football career in general? Is the NFL something you aspire to get to?
Oh yeah, most definitely. I want to go to the league and all of that. I want to be the best football player that I could be. I just want to prove my worth, prove who I could be, and like show out, you know, and just have fun with the game. You know, there's I don't really talk a lot with it. I just like to show within my game. So, and you know, I'm working, like I said, currently, like right now, like every day, just to get better and better, like even better than who I was at Oregon State. Even prove to, you know, everybody, like, I'm going to be that guy one day.
That's awesome. And when do you get to Provo? Where are you at right now? And what's kind of the timeline for when you're on campus and enrolling in classes?
So I'm going to be in Provo around late June, probably that last week, maybe even sooner, depending on like housing situation and all that.
Yeah.
So I know the recruits and everything comes in around like July. However, I'm just trying to get situated in June and, you know, get in contact with the coaches and, like, you know, get started, because, you know, I'm eager to work and everything, you know. So, yeah, so, like, late June.
It's going to come quick, but I can't imagine it's quicker than your 40. I saw the reported 4.39 40. Is that legit then, Caleb?
Always legit.
4.39, man, that's impressive. You know, I don't know if you've had the chance to, or if Coach Guilford's talked to you about him, but, you know, Chris Wilcox was a guy that – he's going through the NFL draft process right now, and he signed with Guilford and BYU back in 2016. And you know, he was someone that was underrated, but he's got the speed, the size, and now he's turning into an NFL draft prospect. So hopefully you can have that success at BYU, can give you all the success you're looking for, both on and off the field. And Caleb, I know Cougar Nation is excited to see you part of the blue and white, and looking forward to your career starting up this year at BYU this fall.
I'm excited as well. I'm ready to get to work. Like, this is what it is. And talk about Christopher Cox, like, you know, that's a great inspiration. Like, you know, I don't know him personally, but just hearing stories about him, because I know he's from where I'm from over here. So, like, you know, I love to see it, and, you know, I hope for the best for him.
All right, that was Caleb Hayes. So good stuff there from the newest member of the BYU football team. We'll take a break here on Cougar Sports Saturday. Much more football talk to go here on the show after this. Welcome back in to Cougar Sports Saturday. It's Matt Biamonte and Mitch Harper here in hour number three. We just heard from the newest member of the BYU defensive back room, Caleb Hayes. Great stuff there, and we'll post it on our podcast feed, which you can always find at kslsports.com. And it kind of dawned on me when I was listening to that, Mitch. Let me know if you're feeling this or if you think I'm crazy. I kind of feel like maybe that's the answer at the safety position. I know that he played cornerback at Oregon State, but he's got a tool set that I think could transfer to safety, similar to what we saw from Troy Warner, where I was even one of those guys when Troy moved. I'm like, is that the best use of Troy Warner? And then, yes, I think it was. I thought Troy was a great safety last year. Because that defense, that cornerback position, I think, is locked down. Even with the injury to Micah Harper, I feel good about that. The safety position, to me, is a big question mark, and I'm just listening to him, and I'm kind of like, maybe this is the answer at one of those safety positions.
Yeah, I would not be opposed to that at all. I think it would be a great move. I think you got to be versatile to be in that secondary for BYU this year, because as we know, they'll do a lot of cross training. They'll have a lot of guys that play in multiple spots. They'll put them in the Cinco. They'll put them in the Ocho. They'll put them in everything. You know, they'll put them in all these different spots. So, yeah, I think that, you know, he could be a guy that plays that safety spot. I think in terms of maybe body type, though, maybe one of them a little bit taller at safety. I kind of like my safeties, you know, around that 6 foot, 6'1" range. Maybe a guy like Jacob Robinson, too, who's also a transfer,
yep,
comes in from Utah State, going to be eligible this year, a former Orem High product. Maybe he could be an option at safety. Because I'm with you, Matt. I think that safety room is a question. Chaz Ayu comes back from the injury. I think he's going to be a starter. But after that, though, I'm looking at that room and I'm going, you know, who's the next Andrew Rich? Who's the next, you know, Jared Lee, Daniel Sorensen? Who's that guy? Because it feels like BYU's just been kind of blessed with great safeties. Even who's the next Zane Anderson? Who's the next Troy Warner?
Yep.
There's always been one or two really good safeties for BYU. And I think Chaz Ayu is going to be really good, even though I almost wonder if his highest potential could be achieved at linebacker. And I know he kind of plays that, again, a hybrid type role, strong safety and a little bit of in the box too. But after him, though, you know, is Malik Moore ready to take that step forward? George Udo's coming back from an injury. Ammon Hanneman, JaVale Brown. There's not much meat on the bone right now in that safety room. If you get one injury, I'm sweating quite a bit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that Caleb Hayes definitely could be someone I think needs to probably be cross-trained and be able to play any one of those spots this year if he wants to play immediately.
And one of the reasons I like Hayes as a possible safety is because of Chaz Ayu. We trust Chaz Ayu as a run defender. We know he's physical. We know he can tackle playing linebacker. Coverage, he can do it, but he hasn't played the safety position in a while, so that might be a learning curve. But if you pair that type of player up with Hayes, who just said he runs under a 4-4, who maybe can cover sideline to sideline and help cover over the top, I feel like that could be a good pairing where you're mixing and matching skills and abilities. Where outside of Hayes, I mean, who's another guy who could fit that kind of Kua role opposite of Chaz Ayu, who I think is going to be that guy who's up at the line of scrimmage, getting involved in the run game? There's not a lot of guys on the list right now that I feel great about covering sideline to sideline and being that over-the-top help.
I think someone that could be maybe fit that billing, and it might be a little bit of a reach. He's still kind of someone that's working his way up the depth chart and earning more reps as the season goes along, or as the years go by, excuse me. Shimon Willis, I know the coaching staff's been pretty high on him. Former Weber State transfer. He played a little bit of safety and cornerback the past couple years. So I think he could be someone that maybe slides into that type of role that you're describing. But yeah, I mean, I'm just not seeing that. That's the one position, safety, going into 2021 that I have some real questions,
yeah,
about for BYU. I mean, because everywhere else, even with the inexperience, we talked to Dave McCann in hour number one, and there's going to be some youth along the offensive line, or some new faces, rather. But you're bringing a bunch of guys that have had game experience, that they have experienced live action before, and they're being coached by another seasoned veteran in that offensive line room, and Daryl Funk, who's been around for 30 years. You would think that his wealth of experience can help maybe bring a new vernacular and kind of new techniques to kind of build off of what Jeff Grimes and Eric Mateos taught that room. So, yeah, safety is clearly the one spot, even more so than the quarterback. I know the quarterback room is where you got to get that right, and I understand the significance of quarterback, but safety to me, the back end, is a little bit worrisome for the defense to me right now where we stand in April for BYU going in this fall.
It's nice to have a guy like Hayes, though, in the mix where it's just another option and another selection there at any of those positions. Got to take a break, though, here on Cougar Sports Saturday. On the other side, we'll continue talking some football as we break down the season at whole with ESPN's FPI results hitting the web. We'll discuss what they predict for BYU football after this.
This is Cougar Sports Saturday. Cougar Sports Saturday.
A presentation of KSL Sports.
Got it for three! Cougars by 20!
Every Saturday, all year long. BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans.
For Cougar fans. It's Cougar Sports Saturday. Here are your hosts, Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte.
On your legacy home of BYU Sports.
KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Welcome back into the show. Cougar Sports Saturday. Mitch Harper, Matt Biamonte, 140 days away. Still, BYU football is back. Cannot wait. Cougars going to be taking on the Arizona Wildcats. And big shout out to all of you in Cougar Nation gobbling up the 12,000 tickets to that BYU-Arizona game. In a matter of hours, the tickets from BYU's allotment were sold out in a hurry. I know all of you out there in Cougar Nation are excited for a normal football season return. But I think you also want the normalcy to continue from what was a unique year this past season. You would love to see the 11 wins years continue like BYU experienced last year. And, it's going to be tough to replicate that, Matt. But I think, a lot of excitement about this BYU football team from a local perspective, from fans and, here locally. But on the national perspective, there's really no expectations for this program. And it's an exciting, predicament to be in because you're riding high after a special 11-win season, yet there's no expectations placed on you. And that was highlighted by the ESPN FPI this week, which released its preseason ratings. And this is an advanced metric looking at forecasting and try to project what will be the end result for college football in 2021. BYU checks in at number 63. Keep in mind, they finished at number 13 in the final FPI rankings for 2020. So a big dip for BYU, dropping 50 spots. Low expectations for BYU going into 2021.
The FPI is a measure of a team's strength. I'm reading this from ESPN's page because I'm trying to grasp the calculation here. Is a measure of the team's strength that is meant to be the best predictor of a team's performance going forward. It represents how many points above or below average a team will be with projected results based on 20,000 simulations of the rest of the season using FPI results, yada, yada, yada. So they have BYU at about 7.3 projected wins. And I look at this schedule, 7.3, if BYU were to win 7, I think you'd feel okay about it. It's not what you would want, but being able to go to another bowl game in a quote-unquote reloading year where you lose guys to the NFL draft, I think would be a good thing. However, if they can win 9 or 10, I think it would speak volumes to where the program is. Because last year, let's face it, Mitch, I think you and I would agree that the program took a step forward. We said even with this bad schedule, you got to win these games, you got to win them convincingly, and that would mean the program's improving. Check, they did that, they're moving forward. But this year will really validate how much the program has moved forward, meaning if they exceed those expectations, they win 9, 10, 11. I mean, 11 would be amazing, but if you win 8, 9, 10 games, then absolutely the program is heading in the right direction. And what I love about this year's schedule, and we'll discuss this for the next 140 days, I'm sure, is you can make the case that if things break your way, you can win double-digit football games. Even with you only returning 31% of your offensive production, which is on the low end of college football, whereas teams that BYU plays like Arizona State and Utah are above 80% returning in production, you still you get those teams at home. I mean, things break your way to where I think they could easily exceed the ESPN FPI predictions.
I agree completely. I mean, honestly, seeing these ESPN FPI ratings and seeing some where some of BYU's opponents in their preseason ratings check in, to me it highlights that a lot of this schedule is winnable. And I've always felt that way, you know, just looking at simply the brand names. But the more intel we get on some of these teams as they go through spring practices, Utah just completed their spring game up on the hill. And, you know, they're going to be breaking in a new quarterback, a new running back. So a lot of newness for them, despite a lot of returning experience on the defensive side, a lot of new players at key positions. I just feel like in years gone by in BYU, for BYU in the independence era, there's always been these kind of extremes where you got this block of four games against the UMasses, the New Mexico States, the Liberties, just these cellar dwellers in the sport. And then there was these other two or three games that were against top 15, the Wisconsins, the Michigan States, that were viewed as these perennial college football playoff contenders, and there was really nothing in between. It feels like this entire schedule is just a bunch of in-between, you know, anywhere from 40 to 80 rated teams, and they could be a lot of 50-50 ball games. But, hey, I feel like from the confidence that was gained from last year and this belief in the system and just what that did for the program and how they feel like they can compete with anyone, I got to feel like, you know, that was just not fool's gold. That was something tangible that can be carried over even with a bunch of new personnel in the program. So, yeah, I feel like BYU can win 9 games with the schedule. I feel like the quarterback situation is in a spot where BYU, they're going to be hard-pressed to go wrong with that. I mean, I just feel like either Hall, Romney, or Conover, I feel comfortable in any one of those guys can win a lot of ball games.
Yeah,
I think people are just getting too hung up on 7 power fives, instant step back for BYU, new quarterback, new faces here, new faces there. No, I feel like BYU, the way they've constructed their roster, they should be able to contend with any of these Power 5 teams. Like, who's losing sleep at night going to Washington State? I don't. I don't think that's – I don't look at that as a game where BYU is just going to be outclassed. Like, there's just not any game on the schedule where I say BYU is completely outmatched other than maybe USC. But you just never know what you're going to get from USC. I would think they should be a 10-11 win team when they play BYU, but – They could also be a 7-win team and be in shambles. So I think anything's on the table for this team, and I think it's a nice spot to be in with these preseason rankings being so low for BYU because they could prove a lot of people wrong once again.
Well, and I think some of it too, and I this may come off as a negative, and I don't mean it to be, so hear me out before you jump all over me, Mitch. Please hear me out here. I think Zach Wilson is been giving too much credit for the success of last year's team. He was outstanding. Don't get me wrong, but you had a 1,000-yard rusher. You had one of the best offensive lines you've ever had. You had a tight end haul in over 10 touchdown passes. You had a really solid defense that had experience at the defensive line who created pressure. You had a really good linebacking core. You had great safety play. You had great special teams. It wasn't just Zach Wilson was outstanding and he carried the team to wins. That was a great football team last year, led by a great quarterback. So I think sometimes you look at it and you say, well, Zach's going to go number two. And so, of course, they're not going to be able to duplicate what they did because they're losing the second best college football player in terms of being drafted in the NFL. That's just not the case. You return your top two running backs. You get Isaac Rex back. You get a lot of the receivers back. Neil Pau, guys, and Gunnar Romney had great years last year, and we're just skirting him to the side with the news that the Nacuas have transferred into BYU. So there is a lot of great talent returning, and I think that's getting lost in the shuffle when you think about this upcoming team because Zach was so encompassing, and there was the Heisman hopeful and all of that, but there was a lot of other great guys on the last year's team that are coming back to this year's football team.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. It really is because, you know, Zach Wilson, even in that after last season, the week one win at Navy, he wasn't the big storyline out of that win against Navy. It was like Tyler Algier's dominant performance. Yep. And just how dominant at the line of scrimmage BYU was. Why can't they replicate that? I mean, BYU is not, you know, to me, I think the national narrative on BYU football is no longer just this, you know, pass-happy program with great quarterback play. It's now a physical brand of football. And I think that's how people, you know, that follow football associate BYU, and that started with Bronco Mendenhall and the great run of linebackers that they had with Kyle Van Noy and then Fred Warner. I think Kalani's maintained that. I think there's just this expectation where it's the cliches, you're going to play BYU, you're going to get hit in the mouth type thing. Like that's, I think BYU can replicate that again, and then you pair it up with some of this great talent that they're accumulating at the skill positions now. It should be a recipe to have a lot of success. Now, they got to prove it, and, you know, who knows? Some of these other teams, they're getting low ratings. They might exceed expectations, too. So anything is possible in college football except for making the playoff. That's a whole other conversation.
Anything's possible, but you can't achieve your dreams.
only one new team can make it in the playoff. It's going to be Bama. It's going to be Clemson. It's going to be Ohio State. But I think that, too, you know, I just look at the schedule. You know, Arizona project as 102nd best team in the FPI ratings. I look at that as kind of an accurate statement. BYU should roll through Arizona. Yep. I don't look at that Arizona team as a threat at all. I think that should be kind of a breakout night for the new QB, and BYU handles Arizona, honestly. I think that should be the type of production BYU puts out. But I'm curious, like, do you feel like, because to me this season could be kind of like 2007, where everything was so new. They lost the hotshot quarterback. John Beck went on to be a second-round pick, new quarterback, but he had some experience in the program already. A lot of new faces at key spots, yet the machine kept going. I mean, do you think that BYU is built to not necessarily get 11 wins, but to just kind of keep the success going, kind of like that golden run that they had early on in the Bronco Mendenhall era?
I think so. I think that particular team, I think, is a great analogy of what is possible, because they still had Austin Colley, but maybe there's not a receiver on this team that's as good as Austin Colley. Possibly Puka Nacua, but he's not returning. This is his first year, but you got experience coming back there, and I just love the schedule. I think this is, for me, the dream schedule for BYU football, where you have some big names on there, but there's nothing crazy to where you're like, geez, this is too hard. The month of September is very manageable with home games against good teams, and I like that UCF's there at the end of the month. That's a winnable football game. I know they lost to them last time they played, but you can win that game. October's nice. You bring some teams into Provo like Virginia and Boise State, and Virginia, I think, is a very winnable football game. I don't think you should ever lose a football game to a quarterback wearing the number 36. That's just me. I like my quarterbacks to be 1 through 20, or 1 through 19, excuse me. 2020 would be weird. But
I like that.
You can win that football game. I mean, you really can make a case that BYU could be an 11-win football team. That's not crazy. Yeah.
You can definitely make that case. I think you could also make the case, you know, if things go sideways with injuries and whatnot, you could go 6 wins. I mean, I think there's going to be a lot of 50-50 ball games potentially in this, but I feel like if what transpired last year was not just a flash in the pan, it was a byproduct of the schedule, if it was truly a shift in the direction, the trajectory of BYU football under Kalani Sitake, then you should be able to be good enough to handle Baylor in Waco, who was a 2-win football team last year. Like, some of these Power 5 teams that BYU's playing, like, they weren't great a season ago. Small sample size, sure, but I just think that BYU, they've had a lot more practice time over the past 12 months than a lot of these teams, and they've had a lot more game experience, even though, you know, some of their starters aren't returning. A lot of these backups, as Kalani's given so many opportunities to reserves to get snaps, they've got valuable game experience, where some of these teams, they haven't really played meaningful snaps in maybe 2 years for some of these guys. Yeah. So it's going to be interesting. And I think that, you know, BYU's got a chance to prove some of the projections and the prognosticators wrong. That's a good spot to be in coming off a special 11-win season a year ago.
We'll wrap up the show on the other side with the hurry up. We'll be back after this. It's Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSLSports.com. All right, welcome back to Cougar Sports Saturday. Matt Biamonte and Mitch Harper wrapping up a great show here mid-April. The off-season is underway, but we always have you guys locked down and entertained. Dallin brings the controversial top five lists. We bring some good guests on and have some good debate. So however and wherever you've been listening today, we appreciate it always here from the Cougar Sports Saturday group on KSL News Radio. And as always, Mitch, well, not as always, I don't know what I'm saying here. Recently, we've been wrapping up the show with a segment we like to call the Hurry Up, and we bring in some beautiful music that I make sure to play my six-month-old son as often as I can here. NFL Films, he's got to know that this is everything. This is life. This is the way. NFL That's Films. Right. Let's start things off, Mitch, with the pool. I can't swim a lap. I'm a really bad swimmer, but Josu Dominguez broke a Dominican Republic National Republic record in the 200-yard breaststroke with a time of 2 minutes and 15.14 seconds. Just that is blazing fast in the pool. And legitimately, I really can't swim that well, so to see someone swim like this, it just brings complete and utter envy because I wish I could learn, but I can't.
Yeah, so can you? Are you someone though that will not go in the deep end?
No, I'll go in the deep end.
Okay,
I'm not afraid of water. I'm just a horrible swimmer. So
I got you. Well, I asked that because my dad, he is frightened of the pool. Like it's always like we go on a family vacation. I'm always like, Dad, come in this. Like if it's a pool that's got like anything, you know, maybe six or above. It's like, Dad, come on in down in this end of the pool. You know, like, it just frightens him. I find it sometimes amusing. So I had to ask that. I was like, are you frightened of the pool there, Matt?
I will say this. I should be. I almost drowned as a kid, believe it or not. I went, and it was in Aspen Grove. I went down a slide, not knowing it was in the deep end. And look, it's my parents' fault. They should have put me in swimming lessons. But I didn't know it would be that deep. And my parents went around, and a lifeguard saved me, and all was well. So I may not be here if it wasn't for that lifeguard. I don't know this person's name. I was a little kid, but... But I'll go in the deep end. Yeah.
That's good. That's good to hear. I personally, I can swim a little bit. Not as good.
Can you rip the breaststroke like Dominguez?
Absolutely not. I'm impressed with that accomplishment from Dominguez. BYU Women's Volleyball, big match tonight. The NCAA Sweet 16. It's pretty cool. The NCAA adjusted their schedule for BYU, and they're no Sunday policy that they adhere to. They adjusted the game from Sunday to today. So yep. BYU going to be taking on the number one seed Wisconsin Badgers, Big Ten champs. Hey, if BYU can get by Wisconsin, it can maybe make a run. Heather Olmstead, that BYU women's volleyball program, they always do a great job in the NCAA tournament. Do you like their chances, Matt? Because I know you follow women's volleyball. You got a close knowledge of it. Do you think they got a chance tonight?
I love their chances. I think that this BYU volleyball team has all the makings of a Final Four team. Now, Wisconsin will be a challenge. Don't get me wrong, but they just swept UCLA. Now, those were they're close sets, but what really impresses me when you see a sweep is when you look at the score of the sets. Now, when BYU is able to maintain composure in close finishes, that tells me a lot about this team, that they can close the door when they need to in close set opportunities. They're talented on the outside. They got a good libero. They're good at the net. They have all the makings. I think they can definitely win tonight against Wisconsin.
Yeah, hopefully they can get it done. So good luck to them. That starts up at 6 o'clock, going to be on ESPN3. So online, hop on to watch BYU Women's Volleyball take on the number one seed, Wisconsin Badgers. We talked about it a little bit earlier, but just again, basketball news in the transfer portal. Mike Saunders, he's staying at Cincinnati. That happened because Cincinnati got a new head coach, and apparently Mike Saunders liked that new head coach, so he is staying at Cincinnati. Alfonso Plummer, former Utah Ute, he commits to Illinois. But BYU still in the mix for some transfer portal guys. Jordan Goldwire, a name to keep an eye on from the Duke Blue Devils. He's got BYU and Utah, oddly enough, in his top six. But I think the Cougars got a good shot here, potentially, for Goldwire. He's a guard. Mike Krzyzewski gave some high praise to him upon entering the portal, kind of thanked him for his time at Duke. So that's a name to definitely keep an eye on.
Goldwire would be a big one. However, as we talked about earlier, the two biggest ones, they're not in the portal, but it's Harms and Barcelo. I just think those are guys that have already made a huge impact at BYU, and if you get them back, that's like striking gold in the portal, man. Those two dudes would be big.
They would be huge for BYU basketball if they can get those guys added for next season. BYU baseball, They took down the Utes earlier this week, 7-4. It was their lone win this week. But we got to acknowledge BYU baseball, Mike Littlewood's program. They've been kind of a little bit cold this year on the bats. They're struggling. They're one of the bottom 10 in batting average this season. They got swept this week against Omaha, 3 games. So unfortunate there. But hey, they got a win over the Utes, and that has to get some praise. Anytime a BYU team takes down the Utes, that's got to get a mention here on Cougar Sports
Saturday. Amen to that. Amen. Scoreboard renovation underway down at Lavelle Edwards Stadium. Mitch, I bought a new drone, so I might have to go give it some practice down at not, of course, above the stadium. Would never do that. But, you know, far enough away and high enough away that I could get an aerial peek at what's happening down at the stadium.
Yeah, I went and checked it out real quick yesterday. It's coming along nicely. They're working on the south end right now. And it was kind of cool, crazy to see the construction workers throwing out the letters that were on the scoreboard before it said Brigham Young. They're just chucking them. I'm like, ah, it's just kind of weird seeing like the Oval Y just getting dumped into a bin. But it was just like, dang, like I would take that. Like, it'd be kind of a cool souvenir. You don't have to throw that in the bin. Like, come on, send that my way. But yeah, the scoreboard, we'll check in with that pretty much every week. Yep. I'm kind of fascinated always by construction updates with anything that's new like that at the football stadium. So we'll keep you posted on KSLSports.com with that.
All right, that's a wrap here for Cougar Sports Saturday. Thanks for listening. Thanks to everyone. Have a wonderful weekend, and we'll see you next week.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLPodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.